Welcome, everyone, to a Baseball America podcast. Along with Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. I was just sitting here, Aaron, thinking about how I'm a little weary from a busy weekend of travel, as you also had. I don't have your avian bird flu, but I am. I do have two kids, which is basically the equivalent, in terms of work and workout and draining your energy.
Yeah.
Although it doesn't sap your will to live, it actually improves it. Anyway, the point is, we're both tired, but I get a little juiced up by opening day in the major leagues and by a college podcast. I mean, I look forward to the college podcast every Monday. It's the highlight of my Monday.
Yeah, it is a lot of fun. I'm also looking forward to it.
Sure you do. All right.
Did I sell that?
Let's get this over with for Aaron, who doesn't want to be here. That was funny. We had a new number one this week, Aaron, that was quite a deliberation in our top 10 this week.
Yeah.
And this was actually, Will Lingo and I came out of it when we have the corridor power. Our co-editors in chief, our offices have a door in between it. So we, whether we like it or not, we have to communicate all the time, which is wonderful, actually. But Will was very complimentary. He has not been in several of our meetings lately for reasons we don't need to get into in the podcast. But he was glad to be back this week, and he said, you know, it was really cool to be in on that meeting. He saw what he'd been missing. I said, well, actually, most of them haven't been that thoughtful or dramatic or whatever, but we had a great meeting today because we really had a lot to talk about and what went on with our deliberations at number one and what to do with UC Irvine and Cal State Fullerton. First, how momentous is it for you that Irvine has gotten off to the start that it got off to in the Big West by winning series against Cal Poly with a sweep last weekend and then going to Fullerton on the cross Orange County bus trip and winning 2 out of 3 this weekend?
Yeah, there's no question Irvine is in the driver's seat now in the Big West. I mean,
I believe you like to call it the catbird seat.
The catbird seat. How could I miss an opportunity to use the catbird seat? Yeah, I mean, look, I mean, those are, I think, the three best teams in the league now. I think Santa Barbara is in the mix, but is not quite at that same level. I mean, they've struggled a little bit.
I think you're right.
Long Beach has kind of bounced back from its rough start, but they're not quite in this same group, so... I mean, Irvine is 5-1 in the league with the two toughest series they're going to play out of the way, and one of them on the road against the number one team in Fullerton, absolutely is momentous. I mean, it's Irvine is built, I think, to win 3-game series. That's why they've gone 2-1 so often this year, is because
That's
they've
right.
got two really good pitchers,
yeah.
Daniel Babona and Christian Bergman, and give Crosby Slott credit, their Sunday guy. He's really blossomed into a viable third starter for them.
Plus, he's got a great college baseball
it's
name.
It's a great
Crosby
college
Slott.
Baseball name.
That's awesome.
And you know, if their All-America caliber closer takes care of business on Sunday, then they're looking at a sweep.
Right.
But, that's why the Titans are the Titans. They're not going to give you anything. They're gonna scrap. But give Fullerton credit for salvaging that Sunday game, coming from behind to do it against Eric Pettis. Irvine is, I think, the big story here. And we had a long debate today in the meeting about what to do with Fullerton. Do you
right.
leave them at number 3? I mean, clearly they've played... You know, maybe they're probably the toughest schedule in the country. They're still 20-7, I think.
Yeah, you're right.
They're
7-4 against top 25 teams, which is a lot of games at this point.
Yeah.
To have already played 11 games. I mean, put it this way: Arkansas hasn't played any teams that are ranked. Not that, at the time they were ranked, anyway.
Right.
And Arkansas, we think, has played a solid schedule,
absolutely.
Which they have.
Yeah.
And the Razorbacks have won games on the road, and they're playing in a good league. And yet, you know, it's 11 games for Cal State Fullerton against ranked opponents and none for Arkansas. It's a pretty stark difference.
It is stark. And so I think we both feel like Cal State Fullerton is probably, you know, one of the two or three best teams in the country. And we might still both feel, John, that they're the best team out there.
I mean, you can
right?
really make
I mean,
a strong case that they're the best team in the country.
But even after losing this series. But the bottom line is they did lose this series
right.
at home.
The games are played on the field. They lost a series. They lost at home. Even if you want to minimize the travel, it is the Orange County little rivalry. I mean, this is not like LSU going to Georgia winning 2 of 3 or North Carolina going to Georgia Tech and winning 2 of 3. It's not the same for me because it's not really a road trip, but it's not their home field.
Yeah.
It's not their home fans. They did go on the road. I mean, you really can't minimize the start that Irvine has gotten off to in conference, in that strong of a conference.
Right, and if you compare, here's the other thing for me, is if you compare Irvine and Fullerton head-to-head now, Fullerton's overall record is one game better.
Right.
But Irvine is 5-1 in the league, whereas Fullerton is 3-3.
And Irvine 6-3 against top 25. 6-3
against top 25, exactly.
And their bugaboo basically has been Baylor, and I think they're done with Baylor for
right.
the year.
and here's, to me, the biggest difference right now, the reason that we've got Irvine ahead of Fullerton. The Titans, hey, they've played a really tough schedule, but they've lost two series. Irvine's played a pretty tough schedule, too, and they're 5-0 on weekends.
And those reasons were compelling reasons. And I'll be honest with you, I think the room, the staff, kind of changed places a couple times on where we were going to rank these teams, as you and I actually took opposite viewpoints on this one.
Right.
But I think I was pretty satisfied with ranking Fullerton. I didn't think it was the best thing to do to drop Fullerton from 1 to 6. But the more I think about it, really, I think it's the most fair thing to do, because North Carolina did go on the road and win a conference series against the top 10 team. LSU did go on the road and won a conference series against the top 10 team.
Right.
Rice did go play Tulane. Was that on the road as well?
It was at home, but they swept.
But they swept without their number one starter, without their number two starter.
Exactly.
I mean, these are very impressive. Rice might have the single best freshman in the country in Anthony Rendon. This guy's having a ridiculous year with 10 home runs already. North Carolina has Dustin Ackley already matching his career high with 10 home runs this year.
How about that?
You want to talk about question marks we had for teams coming into the season. This is what we're talking about. Irvine, will they have a third starter? Crosby Slott emerging in that role. Will Irvine be able to score without guys like Ollie Linton and having the speed they had last year and that creativity? Well, as you detailed in College Preview this weekend, they're still an offensive club, even without Brian Hernandez, that didn't qualify academically, even without Ollie Linton with some of the losses they had. Will Cal State Fullerton have enough pitching to go with its offense? Well, their freshmen, Pill and Ramirez, have really stepped up. And all these teams are answering the questions we had for them coming into the year, Aaron, which is a good segue, I think, into our mid-season preview, our mid-season update, which we'll be working on this week for this week's college weekend preview. But I don't think either of us really saw – I think we liked Arizona State, but I don't think either one of us thought that we'd get to mid-season and see the Sun Devils number one.
No.
And I think we, if it could have happened, we both would have said, well, if that's going to happen, Josh Spence is going to have to be out of his mind and be just as good, really, in college as he was in junior college. And Ozzie, oi, 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 Josh Spence has been outstanding. And with him and Mike Leake, Arizona State has as good a 1-2 punch as any team in the country. And it's amazing to me, and a tribute to Pat Murphy and his staff there, that Arizona State could lose what they lost off last year's super regional team and still be number one in midseason this year, Aaron.
Absolutely remarkable. And and Josh Spence, is, in my opinion, is the key. I mean, his numbers, John, are better than Mike Leake's numbers. And Mike Leake's having a Player of the Year caliber season.
They are crazy. His numbers are goofy. They're like Woodbat JUCO League numbers.
I am now convinced there is not a better 1-2 punch in the country than Leake and Spence. And that means, you know, like Irvine's going to win most series because they've got two really dominant arms or pitchers anyway. Arizona State, same thing. Two dominant pitchers. They're going to win most Fridays and Saturdays to start with.
Yeah, they are.
But Arizona State also, I think, is we're seeing this year, again, we've talked about it before, it's a deeper pitching staff than they've had. I mean, Seth Blair shut down Cal State Fullerton this week for 7 shutout innings. Mitchell Lamson, the freshman left-hander, makes his first career start on Sunday.
That's
a complete game.
That's huge.
I mean, they've got some more arms here, and you know, the lineup is not as explosive as it was. I've talked to coaches who played Arizona State, and they say, look, I mean, this is not the lineup that's going to put the fear of the God into you like last year. Coaches say they're not as good as they were last year, but look at them. I mean, they're 23-5.
Yeah, last year, I mean, they pulled Marcel Champagne off the bench, and the guy's hitting 400 for a month and a half. You know, this year, the guy who's kind of that analogy was Jared McDonald, a JUCO guy they got late. They didn't initially sign him. He hasn't exactly been Marcel Champagne, you know, but they've been productive enough. Jason Kipnis is clearly proving, at least at the college level, that he can put up wicked numbers without having to be a complimentary guy.
Yeah.
He's been the main guy. And then, you know, the other guy that we kind of in the Denny Green Award category, which we'll get to more later, but he is exactly who we thought he was, Carlos Ramirez. He's been a rock behind the plate for them. He's delivering a team-high home runs, 10 home runs. They're better pitching, better defense, not nearly the offense they had last year, but guess what? Pat Murphy doesn't need to have that kind of thunder to generate offense. They have a tremendous walk-strikeout ratio as a team. They're a pretty efficient base-stealing team, pretty aggressive base-stealing team. Pat Murphy's teams are going to score. Now he's got some pitchers. This might be Arizona State's best equipped team to win a national championship that Pat Murphy's had there, because I don't think he's ever had a 1-2, even back in 98 when he had Phil Lowry and Ryan Mills, who was a first-round pick, Ryan Mills, sixth overall pick in 98. He's never quite had this 1-2 punch on the mound like he has with Spence and Leak. It's a little bit crazy to think that this might be Arizona State's best national championship, team best equipped to win a national title. But they're number one right now, and they've really earned it. And the only thing that makes me have any caveats about them, Aaron, is that the Pac-10 is really down this year.
Yeah.
So I'm almost wondering if a down year in the Pac-10 helps them or hurt them. Maybe they'll be less beat up, less worn down by season's end, because the Pac-10 has two other teams with winning records right now, Cal at 15-14 and the O-State Ballers, who once again are balling after sweeping Cal this weekend and re-entered our rankings.
You know what reminds me of, though, is 07 when Arizona State, you know, cruises really to Omaha.
Right.
And I remember Murphy saying in the pre-tournament press conference, you know, we really haven't been punched in the nose all year long.
Yeah, you're right.
And, you know, how are we going to respond once we do get punched in the nose?
And Oregon State's had bam, bam, left, right, left.
And they were done.
But, you know, this team has more than four pitchers.
Yeah.
That team had four pitchers. Leak was one of them. Brian Flores, Jason Jarvis, who we all know, really good arm, 5-cent head.
And Josh Sautau.
Who Josh Spence is Josh Sautau, but a better version.
He is better.
So this,
and I love Josh Sautau, but
I know you do.
This guy is better.
Josh Spence is better. And go back to the draft coverage we had the last couple of years for my love affair writings on Josh Spence, because scouts in that area, in the Four Corners area, love Josh Spence. It's the Baseball America podcast. I'm John Manuel with the horrible Tom Heinsohn impersonation.
That was bad.
Aaron Fitt is also alongside critiquing my impersonations. Aaron, we were talking about Arizona State as one of the bigger surprise teams in the country this year. In the meeting, you talked about our preseason top 10. Seven of those preseason top 10 teams are still in the top 10. Only ones that are not are UCLA, Missouri, and Texas A&M, our preseason number one. And is it safe to say that A&M has been a little bit of a disappointment, a mild disappointment at this point? They really seem like they haven't quite gotten consistent yet. Getting all firing on all cylinders. Yet.
I should correct you there, John, because actually UCLA was not in the top 10, but
okay.
Ole Miss is the
Ole
other
Miss,
one. Which
Ole
is,
Miss.
I mean, Ole Miss and Texas A&M are still top 20 teams. So,
right.
So you've got nine out of your top 10 are still at least in the top 20.
Right.
And Missouri's had some
Missouri just hasn't been – they are not what we thought they were.
No, Missouri has been disappointing. But what was your question?
A&M. why do you think maybe A&M hasn't quite been living up to the BA hype preseason? What's the missing ingredient for the Aggies right now? Why are they not gigging them?
You know, I don't know exactly, because I look at this pitching staff and I still think, by God, it's a great pitching staff, and Brooks Raley has been great this year. Alex Wilson has been great this year. Barrett Laux has not been great this year, so maybe that's one reason, is they haven't gotten the rock-solid, steady Sunday guy.
I think Barrett Laux gave all his karma from being named LOUX to Shane Laux, formerly of the Tigers, who's now somehow in the Arizona Diamondbacks starting rotation.
Never heard of him.
I have no idea how that happened.
Shane Laux?
Shane Laux was a second-round pick way back in the day. I've edited way too many Shane Laux org reports over the years. And somehow that guy is in the Diamondbacks report. I think those guys got Heaven Can Wait body. Like, your career was dead, but we're going to put his career in your body. And your career.
Right.
I hope that hasn't happened for Shane Laux's sake. Because Barrett Laux, I'm getting him mixed up. Shane Laux, his career was dead 3 years ago, I thought. And now somehow he's back in the big leagues.
How about that?
It's crazy. Heaven Can Wait reference of the day by me. But anyway, we're getting back to the Aggies. They're still 7-5 in the league. I mean, they're
going to be fine. I mean, they're absolutely still going to compete for, I think, a regional host spot. I still believe that. They played a fairly tough schedule, and they've weathered it okay. And I expect this team will get hot and make a run in the Big 12 like it has the last couple of years. I just think that's the MO of this program. And looking ahead, I think, I mean, at Kansas State's been playing well, but that's a series that A&M should win.
You better strap it up on Friday night, because AJ Morris, yeah. 0-8 for K-State right now, which is crazy.
Here's my prediction.
Brooks Raley
is going to hand him his first loss of the year on Friday.
You can't even fathom the thought of Brooks Raley losing back-to-back starts, can you?
I can't. It's unfathomable.
And then they're playing Nebraska, OK State at home. Those are winnable series in Nebraska. To use the Will Kimmy reference, beep, beep, they're backing up.
Right.
There's no doubt they are backing up. Oklahoma State, backing up as well, 4-5 in the league.
They've lost two of their three weekend series. Really, I mean, they've only played three weekend series this year, and they've lost two of them. So.
How about this? A&M only has four conference series remaining. Is that right? No, five. K-State, Nebraska, Oklahoma State, Texas, Oklahoma.
And those last two are on the road, so at least two-thirds of the Texas series are. So that'll be critical. I mean, can they – at that point, they need to be – really humming along, and hope that they're in a groove, because that's a tough way to finish.
But the Big 12 is what we thought it would be. This has been a league of death.
Yeah,
just no easy weekends. You're here in Nebraska, which I think we thought was a pretty talented, solid team. Like you said, an unpredictable team, a team that's tough to get a read on. They seem to always have a junior college transfer or two who comes up big.
Yeah.
They've struggled a little bit this year. Now 4-8 in the league after getting swept. Mike Nesseth banished to the bullpen. He hasn't been as good as they needed him to be. But Missouri, only 5-7 in the league, under 500 for the season. Talk about bubble watch. Missouri better get it in gear.
They're not even close to the bubble right now. They really got to get hot.
Yeah, they got to get hot. Texas Tech is not a bubble team, but they're 6-6 in the league, but they're the only other team that's under 500. But you have 6 teams with 20 or more wins in the Big 12 already. This is going to be a 6 or maybe even a 7-bid league, Aaron.
I think it should be. There's no reason it should get less than 7.
Yeah, I think that's where we're headed with that league. We talked about a surprise up for me. Arizona State's a little bit of a surprise in the good way. Texas A&M, a little bit of a surprise in the down way. They have not been quite as good.
Yeah.
Who are some other teams, I guess, Aaron, that are a little bit better than we thought they'd be, or not quite what we thought they'd be? Arkansas seems like they sort of qualify for that, although we did have them ranked higher than most people.
I don't think anyone else had them ranked, and we did in the preseason. So, I mean, at least we saw something in Arkansas, and I still think that they're. I don't think they're as good as LSU.
Yeah, yeah. And that's fair.
They're in first place, and LSU's in second place, but I still think at the end of the day, LSU's going to go farther. For me, the big surprise in the top 10 is Miami.
Yeah.
Because if you would have told me 7 weeks ago...
I think you
officially
have to say University of Miami.
If you would have told me 7 weeks ago that the University of Miami...
There you go.
...would be, ranked 10th in the nation and cruising along in the ACC... With Ryan Jackson hitting about 270 and Chris Hernandez with about a 5.8 ERA, I would have said, you're crazy. Those are their two best players, and they've not been great. And yet Miami just wins. I mean, they're 10-5 now in the league. They're 23-8 overall. They've got the Miami mystique, whatever. I mean, Danny Hall told me last week that Scott Lawson, the junior college second baseman Miami brought in, might be the best player in the ACC that he's seen this year. I mean, he had a big weekend against them, and that's what it is. It's
good grief.
It's different guys have big weekends and carry them. Jason Haggerty had a big 3-run homer this weekend against Florida State. I mean, it's different guys step up for them each week.
Like you said, Gutierrez has been one of their better starters all year, and then he goes on Friday and gets lit up. Doesn't even last that one inning.
Chris Hernandez finally bounces back and gives them a good start on
they've
Saturday.
Generally been stable on the weekend, though. Correct me if I'm wrong, with Gutierrez, Nazario, and Hernandez. So those three guys, they've had their starting rotation in place. Kyle Bellamy, as good a closer as there is in the country.
That, to me, is the biggest reason they are where they are, because he has been every bit as good as they hoped he'd be.
Well, nobody builds a bullpen like Jim Morse.
Yeah.
Nobody in college baseball. And you've heard this rant before. If I had to pick any college baseball coach to go be a major league manager, I'd pick Jim Morse. And number one, because I love impersonating him. Number two, because he knows how to handle stars. Miami's had stars. He knows how to handle players of all cultures. They've had a lot of Hispanic players at Miami. They've had a lot of African-American players. It's not like a lot of other college programs. You're basically dealing with white suburban kids. That's not the University of Miami's program. And lastly, he's clearly knows how to deal with ego. He got A-Rod to donate money to University of Miami and build their ballpark when A-Rod didn't even go to Miami. But lastly, he knows how to handle a pitching staff. You really never hear about other coaches and scouts never talk about Miami abusing pitchers, and they always talk about how well Jim Morse maximizes his bullpen. He's not afraid to drop guys down. Yeah. Bellamy's another sidearm guy. Jay Tesper was a sidearm guy back in the day. They've had many. Luke DeBold was another guy they've had. They've always had great closers. The tradition at the University of Miami was built before Jim Morse by Ron Frazier, but it's very rare to have a coach follow a legend and build on it. He didn't immediately follow Ron Frazier, but, man, Jim Morse's legacy at the University of Miami is pretty strong, and it's built on those kind of things. Players from all different walks of life, take guys like Charlton Jimerson, who in a lot of other programs would have been buried and run off at Miami. He was on academic scholarship and deep into his senior year, he emerged as a star. Or like this year we were talking about, where they lost the kind of talent that they lost, and yet he has replaced it and gotten players who we didn't think this is not a team as talented as last year's roster.
Not even close.
And coached it up to the kind of year they've had. I agree. I think Miami's probably the biggest surprise in the country, and shame on us, I guess, for not giving that full credit in preseason to Jim Morris.
And that said, John,
the flip side.
If you ask me today, are they going to Omaha? I'm saying no way.
I agree with you. And like we were just reading a preview of the college basketball championship game tonight, Michigan State and North Carolina, and it's like talent versus blue collar. You know, talent usually wins in that. I almost always put my money on talent, and until we hear somebody say, "Boy, Miami's talent really is undersold. They really are as talented." You know, I'm with you. I'm still skeptical of their chances to go to Omaha, but they're pretty good, and their season today has been an unqualified success.
Absolutely.
And meanwhile, we did rank Florida State really on the basis of reputation, Mike Martin, that kind of thing.
And they had a good offense.
And they had a great offense on paper. But our big question with Florida State was pitching, and
right.
Boy, they have really the ACC is just crazy, Aaron, because it's such a lopsided league with Clemson still really, in my mind, not having hit its stride.
No, they haven't.
But Clemson, Boston College, and Florida State tie with 6 losses atop the Atlantic Division. I think all 3 of those teams will get to get regional bids, but NC State's in big trouble, Wake Forest is in big trouble, Maryland, yeah. Whatever.
Those 3 teams obviously are, I mean, NC State, you can write them off now.
I mean,
right after this weekend, losing at Boston College, I think their regional hopes are over.
You and Billy Packer agree, I think, that it's over for them. They're going to have to make a significant run here in the second half of the season. The Coastal Division is obviously where it's at with Georgia Tech, Miami, North Carolina, and Virginia. That's a crazy good league. We've talked about the Big 12 being as stacked as it is. We've talked about the Pac-10 being down. Let's talk a little bit about the SEC, Aaron. We really haven't, I don't think, dwelled on the SEC too much. We've talked a little bit about LSU, Arkansas, Georgia, Ole Miss. I think one of the biggest surprises of the year is the reinvention of Scott Biddle at Ole Miss, who was the best closer in the country. What, did he lead the league in strikeouts as a reliever?
He led the country in strikeouts per 9 innings.
That is just sick. And this guy, I mean, it wasn't Steven Strasburg numbers, you know, don't get carried away here. But he comes back the last 2 weekends now as a Sunday starter, and lo and behold, the Rebels have won 6 in a row. I know they blew his game last weekend. This weekend, he doesn't leave it to the bullpen. He's his own starter and his own closer. Goes a complete game. What's been the big surprise and what's been the disappointment in the SEC for you?
Well, to follow up on Biddle, I mean, I've always thought that this guy would be a very successful starter just because – I mean, you'd see him, you know, it really sticks out in my mind was seeing him against South Carolina last year, and he comes in, you know, and he's facing a tight situation, and he's got Justin Smoak coming up there batting from the left side, and he freezes him with 2 or 3 change-ups, a really good change-up. I mean, this guy has got... He's got the changeup, and he's been able over the course of his career to come in and pitch 6 innings and sustain. I mean, he clearly can hold his velocity.
He's never been a 1-inning guy,
right? So, I mean, I'm not surprised that he's. I'm really not at all surprised that he's performing this well as a starter. And I think it was a great move for Ole Miss. I think it really energized them now because now the way Philip Irwin has pitched, he's been very solid for them. Pomeranz really Drew Pomeranz, the left-hander, gave him a good start on Saturday. All of a sudden, this pitching staff is. The rotation is to a point where, you know, earlier in the year we were really questioning that.
Right.
And
right.
Now I think it's a strength. It's solidified. Their offense has been very good. I mean, I think Ole Miss, to me, looks like a top 10 team like we thought they were in the preseason.
Let's talk a little bit about Tennessee also. You had a lot about them in the weekend preview. If people missed that, boy, Todd Raleigh, the coach at Tennessee, really – he took over a program in a pretty deep hole, Aaron, from an APR standpoint, the scholarship losses they have, and the way so much of their scholarship money that they do have is tied up in 5 or 6 players.
Several of whom aren't even playing for them. They've got 2 pitchers on full rise who've pitched a combined 1 1/3 inning.
Yeah, it's not a pretty situation at Tennessee. Are they going to drag down the rest of the SEC's RPI to the point where the SEC maybe – only get 7 bids? Or are they that? Is it that hopeless at Tennessee? It really doesn't look like it's going to be more than they might have a Mississippi State an 08 kind of record.
Yeah, you know, and the thing is, until this weekend at least, they've been really very competitive in a lot of games. I think, you know, they had actually out-hit a lot of their opponents in league play, and they had been in position to win. They lost a lot of close games. They played really good defense. I think they had one error in their first nine SEC games or something like that.
Yeah, they definitely played Georgia tight. Played Georgia very tight the previous weekend, excuse me.
And Florida and Auburn, I mean, really all three, they've been in games. I don't think they're going to be as miserable. But then again, I mean, it's snowballing for them. There's no, they're 1-11 in the league now. I mean, you got to wonder if hopelessness is going to set in. I think there's some off-field stuff going on over there. It sounds like just a bad situation. And you know, good luck to that coaching staff trying to maximize it. I do think that Todd Raleigh is a guy who, you know, he's got that blue-collar mentality that you talked about. I think he'll find a way to rally those guys and at least make them respectable by the end of the year. But it's gotten ugly.
And then you got South Carolina and Vanderbilt in the East, Aaron. And prognosis negative right now on both these teams. Vanderbilt may have saved its season by winning that series this weekend against Florida.
That was huge.
That is really huge. Pardon me. Mike Minor is not pitching terribly well. What did he give up? 12 hits in 7 innings on Friday?
His
stuff's been very inconsistent.
To me, he's one of the biggest disappointments out there because I really thought this guy was going to dominate this year. I thought he was going to take that next leap and become the next elite Vanderbilt guy.
And
he hasn't. He's for whatever reason, and I don't know if it's because of the fact that they've had all their catchers hurt. They're in their fourth string catcher. I mean, I know that affects staffs or whatever, but the bottom line is Mike Minor has been not an All-America kind of guy as he was expected to be.
Yep. And then South CAC, as Kevin Garnett called it, South Carolina, this weekend they got 5 games, Clemson and at Ole Miss. That's a very tough week. Then they're home to Auburn, but then they're at Florida, home to Vanderbilt, at Tennessee, home to Georgia. That's a tough closing stretch, and they're 5-7 in the league right now. They've
lost 3 out of their 4 weekend series.
Yeah,
I mean, they've certainly got some work to do. The fact is that because they're just 5-7 in the league, and they're not 4-8 or 1-11.
Yeah, you're right.
They're still in position to make a run, even though they've lost 3 out of 4 weekend series.
I think this is likely still an 8-bid league. That's the way things are going to work out, but if some of those teams, the Alabamas, the Auburns, the Vanderbilts, Kentucky, boy, Kentucky, talk about backing up. I mean, I think this is a team that we really thought was poised to make a leap. They've been on the cusp of the top 25. They get swept this weekend. Not pretty for – and the middle pack of the SEC, those are good teams, but I think it's clear, again, the Big 12 is better. I think it's the best league in the country this
year. Absolutely. For me, there's no question.
At the top, the ACC is very, very good. But the Big 12 bottom is better.
And I do think the ACC has improved its depth because Boston College and Duke are much better. Those
Absolutely.
Are potential regional teams.
Virginia Tech is better.
Tech is better. You're right. They're an offensive club, and they're scrappy.
They are scrappy, and they've got
Maryland,
they've got
for
arms.
Me, is the only team in that league that's really that's soft. And you know, I know NC State's gone backwards, but clearly they still have talent, especially on the mound.
Oh, yeah.
They're still capable of beating you.
Exactly. They're still very capable. Still a team you don't want to see. Still a team that's going to compete with you every weekend, and you just don't know which team is going to show up really for them. Last team I wanted to mention, Aaron, is East Carolina. I think they're in the surprise up. And I don't know if Billy Godwin would be in our Coach of the Year discussion or not. Maybe he would be. I think our Player of the Year discussion is pretty short, Steven Strasburg in story.
Yep.
Our Coach of the Year discussion, though, at midseason, there are going to be a lot of candidates. Certainly, Aaron, Mike Gillespie is on the short list.
Yeah.
But Billy Godwin, the program that he's resuscitated really there at East Carolina, talk about taking over in trouble, taking over a mess from Randy Mazey that had been left there at East Carolina, a program that had been held in such high esteem under Keith LeClair that kind of came down in Randy Mazey's tenure where he just made some bad decisions.
No question.
Won some games but made some bad decisions. And Billy Godwin has really just taken that program and made it just so consistent and blue-collar. And this year, they're a team I would not want to face in a regional because they are just going to – they've shown they can hit good pitching, bad pitching, and different pitching. They can hit.
It might very well be the best offense in the country. I've seen ECU a few times now. I'm going to see them probably again tomorrow against North Carolina.
They got North Carolina and Rice this week. So huge series, huge week for the Pirates.
4 games against top 5 teams and also a game against UNC Wilmington in there. So I think
a historic rivalry.
But I think here's my prediction for this week. I think East Carolina wins at least 3 games this week.
That's a good call. UNCW is coming off a smarting series sweep against George Mason.
And they lost 2 to Coastal before that, and UNCW is sliding. But East Carolina, you know,
they're
just so locked in, and all the way through the lineup. I mean, it starts with Trent Whitehead at the top of the lineup. He's this year's. I mean, I was wondering how they would replace Harrison Eldridge, who I thought was really a spark plug for them last year, a little leadoff guy, center fielder.
Yeah.
But Trent Whitehead has been even better. I mean, he's delivered some power. He's leading the Conference USA in batting.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Didn't he have a huge cape, Trent Whitehead? I think he had a big
cape. I'm
not
sure about that.
I know they had an outfielder who had a huge cape for them last year.
But for me, I mean, one of the keys is Devin Harris, a guy who scouts up in the – you talk about last summer, scouts in the New England Collegiate League raved about this guy's tools. And I've heard scouts say that he's got a legitimate plus major league power, plus major league arm, plus major league speed. I've heard that from multiple scouts. And this guy's got big tools, but he had never performed.
Yeah, he's doing it this year.
And he's really put it together for them. I think, you know, Ryan Wood and Kyle Roller and Steven Batts these guys have really taken steps forward, you know, especially Batts and Wood as seniors. I mean, it's a great lineup. I think probably East Carolina and Rice, I'm prepared to say, might have the – I'm going to say it, John. They have the two best offenses out there of anyone in the country, and they're going to face off this weekend.
That's going to be on this weekend. And then the thing is a big test, I think. East Carolina's offense passed one nice test by coming to North Carolina State in a big rivalry game with a big crowd on hand in Raleigh and really taking it to them.
Yeah.
Now they're coming on Tuesday to North Carolina, which has pitching depth out the yin-yang. We'll really see how their power bats match up with North Carolina's power arms. Even Carolina's 6, 7, 8, 9 guys, those guys throw hard. I mean, they're coming at you with Patrick Johnson and Brian Gaines and some of these guys who can throw hard, who can change you up, who can throw breaking balls at you, right-left matchups. North Carolina's pitching depth is epic at the college level. So that's going to be a great matchup. But then, like you said, and we'll see what Rice – will Ojala be back for Rice this weekend? Possible. Obviously not sure yet. Ryan Berry probably won't be back.
No, he won't be back.
But Jordan Rogers was great last weekend. So a great weekend series coming up here. In Greenville, North Cackalack, with East Carolina and Rice. So
it's Jared Rogers, who's
Jared Rogers,
who stepped
you.
Up
what
on
did I call
Friday.
Him?
It was Jordan Rogers and Jared Rogers. So it's easy.
Okay.
I've confused them myself this year.
Okay, well, I'm glad that I'm not that big of a fool. But we'll get to see East Carolina, and it's a big baseball week. And not just don't forget about the college scene, as we'll talk to you about it every Monday here at BaseballAmerica.com. For Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. Again, Aaron, this week you got the weekend preview with the midseason update, right?
Midseason update coming this week.
That's going to be fun. We'll invent some new categories like the David Bacani Award for Best Short Player, and I like the Denny Green Award for who we thought they were. We got to come up with some other ones for that.
Can you guess my David Bacani Award winner?
Brooks Raley?
No. No, he's not short. Come on.
No. Who is your best short?
It's of course. Should I give it away? It's Jamel Scott from Cincinnati.
What is favorite, it? Like 5'3"?
5'4", and just a. If anyone watched him this weekend on ESPNU against Louisville, he.
I'm sorry, it's Louisville.
Louisville. he showcased that speed. He's an exciting player.
I say it's 36, 24, 36, only if she's 5'3". That's a. Well, sir, makes a lot. Deep cut for you. Not really a deep cut at all.
That was just for Matt Myers right there.
That was just for Matt Myers. So for Aaron Fitt and for my shout-out to Matt Myers, I'm John Manuel. Thanks for joining us on the Baseball America College Podcast. Until next week, so long, everybody.